Well, we're almost there. Many of us exhilarated, some of us exhausted by the run-up to it. A little too much cheer already, maybe for some. And then families are going to be thrown together under the same roof over the next few days, and it can be a recipe for friction. Dr. Paul Dalton is back with us in the last of this series to help us now to navigate those days ahead. And more importantly, maybe to find ways to find the joy in the days ahead. Paul, some people are tired. The pressure is on. Tempers may be frayed, and we do want to get great joy out of those next few days. So help.
Yeah. And you know, Mary, there are a few things that we can do and that we can talk about now that can actually help us do that. Help us enjoy the days that are coming up. And in some ways, you know, kind of help us to kind of get out of our own way. And really to as best we can, really to roll up our sleeves. And to make the best of the days that are going to come. It's a time of year, Mary, that's so important and so significant for many people, you know. And I see this in the hospital, and it'll be repeated in hospitals and hospices across the country. People hang on. People at end of life will hang on over the next few days to spend that Christmas, to be alive for this Christmas. Now, that's a phenomenon or a reality, Mary, that's researched and documented. We hang on for these days.
We have
because
that capacity.
We have that capacity, Mary, to hang
that's
on.
Extraordinary,
yeah,
isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, yeah. So right across the country, we'll see things like that happen. It's also a time of year, Mary, where there are fewer presentations, mental health presentations to emergency services, which is really interesting. Now, a word of caution, Mary, because on the other side of that, on the other side of Christmas, we see that big increase in presentations to A&E departments with people with significant mental health difficulties. And you have initiatives like the First Fortnight, that wonderful arts initiative that really targets the vulnerability that a lot of us will experience after Christmas. But this time itself, Mary, the French sociologist Durkheim refers to these kinds of events as a collective effervescence that human beings are drawn to. What so if you think, Mary, of a really good concert you've been to, or think about the last big football match or rugby match that you were at, there's a sense of with us as human beings when we come together as a collective that we kind of transcend ourselves in a little way. And Christmas is that collective effervescence. And I think sometimes, Mary, quite simply, it's that kind of where I move from me to we. You know, so those times of being with people and around people take on such a significance. But of course, there are lots of things that get in the way, in the way of us having a bit of crack.
And for those of us who are lucky enough to have family and friends that we're going to gather with over the next few days, that's a terrific joy. And a lot of people are going to head home. Now, home may be some place that people haven't lived for 5, 10, 15, 20 years, but they go back home into the family situation. Talk to me about that.
And so many, I mean, as we speak, Mary, so many people making their way back home, the importance of home for people, really buried very, very centrally in the human heart and in the human mind. So we will, many of us will return to the family home, or we'll be under the same roof as people we grew up with. So our parents, if we're lucky enough to still have them, our siblings be around us. And we find ourselves, you know, kind of thrown back in with the first family, Mary. So the first family is the family that I didn't choose, the one I ended up with. And when that happens, and particularly at this time of year, Mary, when we find ourselves with the first family, it we can be catapulted back, you know, 20, 30, 40 years. And suddenly I'm across the table from my sister. I'm across the table from my brother-in-law, and I'm 10 again. you know, and all of the progress that I think I've made as a human being trying to be mature.
You know, and people all over the country listening to you now are nodding and going, oh, gosh, I do just that.
Yeah, yeah. I turn into a 12-year-old. I turn into a 12-year-old, you know. And what, you know, Mary, it's Christmas regression. I mean, psychologically, it's Christmas regression. Or you know, the time warp, the psychological time warp that happens at Christmas time. And suddenly, I'm 12 again.
And you set out with the best of intentions to not be 12 again.
Oh, yeah.
But you go back into the bosom of the first family, as you call it, Paul. You sit around the table, sit in the same spots you always sat in.
Exactly. Right. And take the same armchair, be in the same place and regress and return to 12-year-old. Now, come here. It happens, right? And it can be difficult. You know, the friction that can come with that really can be a very, very challenging for people. So, I mean, there's kind of two things, Mary. And so, number one, expect it, right? It's going to happen. We're going to find ourselves there. Number two, do we have some capacity to draw on the bigger part of ourselves, to draw on the part that is actually grown up, that has negotiated itself in the world, and recognise, okay, I can go back into all of this and I can repeat it all again, or I can do something different here. The psychiatrist who I find myself going back to a lot, a guy called Viktor Frankl. Viktor Frankl was a man who survived the Holocaust. A wonderfully inspirational character. But Viktor Frankl said, you know, he said, between the stimulus and the response, there lies our freedom. So between the stimulus and the response, there lies our freedom. What so often happens, Mary, when we find ourselves back with the first family, is that the stimulus, it's unconscious, it's buried deep. We turn into a 12-year-old, and we're reacting. Now, Viktor Frankl says, actually, if we manage to slow it down, if we manage to come out of that kind of high alert, take a beat and know how to respond to the stimulus, that's where our freedom and in fact, right, that's where the real joy and the fun can come. When we stop being victims to sometimes unconscious stimulus that comes. And that our homes, Mary, our home, the family home, or being under the roof with people that we've grown up with, will always stimulate something. Mm. It'll always be a reservoir for all the wonderful things that happened, but maybe for the things that didn't happen either, for the life that I didn't have, for things that didn't turn out. But the freedom, Mary, really the freedom, for fun and a bit of space is in recognizing that stimulus and then my response.
I'm conscious as well, Paul, that when some people are going home to the first family, they may be bringing with them girlfriends, boyfriends, husbands, partners, children who are not of that first family. So and there's a huge amount of negotiation to be gone through before we get to being round the table on Christmas Day, isn't there?
Yeah. Listen, Mary, probably for some of us, probably months of negotiation. And that negotiation gets the kind of volume is up on that, Mary. When we are living with blended families, when many people this Christmas will share Christmas dinner, will share Christmas Day with a blended family, with an untraditional family. That diversity, I think, is only to be celebrated. Mm. But there is a negotiation required around that. I mean, I think the general kind of negotiation that happens, Mary, goes on for months before Christmas. And whether we like it or not, there is a kind of an unspoken hierarchy. So who do we get to spend Christmas Eve with, Christmas Day? Who gets relegated to Stevens's Day? Like, all of this is going on behind the scenes. And it is because it matters, Mary, because who we spend our time with over those days is a declaration. It's a declaration of love and it's a declaration of commitment. And some of us will find ourselves in situations that we wouldn't necessarily choose, but we do some of that out of love. And so important, right? This, I think, in the last number of years, is the regard for that diversity. And there are many people who will have Christmas Day, maybe where their parents have been divorced or separated. There's estrangement for all sorts of reasons. And in that, you know, the priority, people often say to me, how are we going to navigate this? You know, there's kids coming, they want to spend time here, they want to spend time there. And I'd say, you know, really, the priority here are the kids. And our own wishes and our own desires, the priority is to navigate the next couple of days as best we can for the kids.
Is the key, and you talk about negotiation, to have the conversations early, not to wait until today or tomorrow to finally try and decide where you spend Christmas. Do you go to dad or do you go to mom, or where do you go? If it is, as you say, a blended family or a broken family that still haven't found a best way to be.
And you know, we touched on this a little bit when we talked about bereavement at this time of year, the importance of making a decision, committing to something in advance and doing that rather than the, well, let's see what happens on the day. So, yeah, if those conversations haven't been had at this point, it's not too late. And even that, you know, the idea of I've never really, Mary, seen a broken family. I've seen families in transition, and I've seen families make wonderful transitions into new and sometimes very exciting possibilities and very exciting futures. But that's demanding territory. It asks a lot of us emotionally and psychologically. There's no doubt about that. It really does, you know, Mary. It calls on the grown-up me, the adult version of myself, really to go beyond my personal preferences. It's the real work of love, you know, Mary. The real work of love involves me parking my preferences, my immediate preferences.
Can we do that, Paul? Can we park maybe the angst and the anger and the difficulties that are going on in relationships and say, for these 2 days or these 3 days, whatever it is over Christmas, we're going to park them. We're going to be generous, and we're going to not recall the enmity that is between us, but rather to celebrate the joy maybe that we knew in another time.
Yeah.
That's hard to do. How do you do that?
Come here. It is, Mary. It's probably one of the hardest things to do, because also what we're facing when we're doing that is a situation that I don't want. I want this to be different. I want this to be a different way. But there are times when that's what's called for, Mary. The idea that, you know, that love is a verb, right? Love is an action word. It's muscular and it's steadfast. And it calls for us at times to park certain things. It is not, Mary, you know, it really, I one of those things, you know, that there's a suggestion, Mary, that unless I'm telling you exactly how I feel 100% of the time, that there's something wrong, that I'm not doing the right thing, that's not the case. You know, sometimes we've got to button the lip, Mary.
Although sometimes do we need to call it out? You know, can you overpark it? If there's a situation, and maybe you've come into your partner's family and there is a situation that you've put up with for the past two Christmases, and this Christmas you've said, enough now.
Yeah.
I'm not accepting this anymore from your uncle or your brother or your sister or whatever it is.
Is it
okay to call time on something?
Yeah. You might choose your moment.
Not Christmas Day as you're tucking into the turkey.
Exactly, right? We don't want a repeat of the EastEnders or the Fair City omnibus edition at home. So, of course, Mary, and I think it was really important to say, when there are issues of safety, Mary, we never button our lip when there is issues of safety. That's not okay when there's issues of potential abuse or neglect. No, enough is enough. But maybe around some of the other issues, it's about navigating and choosing a time that's best, that works for people. I had the privilege, Mary, of interviewing some people during the summer. One of them, people who survived really incredible life trauma and adversity. One of them, a young woman, Rachel Kyo. I mean, she said to me, and it really stayed with me, you know, she said, the biggest pain I caused myself was wanting my family to be something that they could never be. the biggest pain I caused myself. And she said it almost in the same sentence, she said, you know, that the healing began, the growing up began, when actually I realised this is who they are and this is how they're going to be forever. Mm. That in that moment, Mary, there's real healing. And in fact, I think that that's where the fun begins. That's when we kind of get out of our own way. Mm. It's that idea, you know, the friction, really. We've talked about kind of family friction. A lot of the friction that comes up for us around these times in our lives, around these days that are unfold, is based on fiction. You know, it's based on the fictional idea of a family, of how it should be, of what I see on the television.
Yeah,
or
the
what
movies.
The perfect Christmas with the perfect family, round the tree, opening
the prezzies, doing it all perfectly. But let's talk about, we're kind of moving into the territory of tradition. I love tradition. Mm. You know, I love the tradition of Christmas. But I suppose there are some traditions that we can hold and some maybe we need to jettison as well.
Yeah, you know, and just as human beings, you know, living in a world of such rapid change, almost constant change, the human brain is it's drawn to the opposite, Mary. It's the human brain is drawn to sameness and to replication and repetition. And Christmas really gives us a good dose of that. It gives us a good dose of sameness. So we'll eat the same food. We'll listen to the same music. We'll watch the same films. And some of us even will reread the same books.
We will.
And do you know why we do that, Mary? We do that because that little human brain of ours, it needs a story, a familiar story with a beginning, a middle and an end. And that's what Christmas gives us. And that's what even some of those rituals and traditions around that, they give us a dose. They give us a dose of the familiar and the predictable that we so need as human beings. We don't even know that we need it. And often, right, the clash, the friction that will happen in many households over the next few days is because the adult brain needs predictability. It needs sameness. And the older we get, the more predictability we need, generally speaking. The younger we are, we want novelty and newness. Mm. So when there's an explosion in Christmas Day or on the Christmas tree with the younger generation, the older generation, that's some of what's happening neurologically.
The generational shift.
Yeah.
It's a pit stop, you say as well. Is that about the time of year it is? It is that pause, that tradition, that time for reflection.
Yeah, it is. You know, it's a kind of like an existential pit stop where we take a look in the mirror. We take a look in the psychological mirror at this time of year. And we've talked, Mary, last week about how difficult and painful it is when there's a recent bereavement. And more generally, you know, we all will sit down and we'll begin to reflect on, what is my life about? Does it matter? There's a psychologist, a guy called James Hollis, and he's a lovely way. He talks about how we stock take our lives in three categories, and that's about shelter, significance, and companionship. That they're the three lenses, if you like, through which we view our lives. So the idea of shelter, Mary, like, do I have are my basic needs being met? Do I have a roof over my head? Do I have enough to eat? We've talked on this program over the year, Mary, of the impact of on homelessness on people. We see a greater number of children homeless this year than we did last year.
And we see the impact, Paul, the statistics tell us, on young children growing up at the moment in hotels and in hubs and not having a front door of their own.
Yeah. You know, Mary, the biggest impact of all of that is shame. And shame is probably one of the most difficult emotions, the most enduring emotions that we as human beings will have to carry for the rest of our lives. So it's hard not to really overestimate the impact of homelessness on children, Mary, and on shame, the children who hide the fact that they have nowhere to live. And we have more of them this year than we did last year. generally, Mary, as adults at this time of year, and if we're fortunate enough to have those basic needs met, they are very basic needs. So the idea of shelter, right? The idea of significance, Mary. You know, do I matter? Does my life matter? Is it meaningful? This enterprise that I call me, does it matter? Will I be remembered? How will I be remembered? We had a very wise philosopher who taught me many, many years ago, and a very joyful man, Mary. And he would say, you know, really, really, he said, the only really important question is, who will cry for me when I die? Who have I impacted? Yeah. Who will miss me? Yeah. And it is me at this time of year, we ask ourselves that under that idea of significance, and am I making a significant difference to someone's life? And that doesn't need to be in fantastic, fabulous ways. Sometimes it's the most simple and it's the most precious. And the third piece, so shelter, significance, the idea of companionship. You know, who am I sharing this one life with, this one beautiful life with? And often those relationship pieces come under the microscope at this time of year too. Mary, there's real capacity in that for us to celebrate and to acknowledge and to begin to tell people actually how much they mean to us and how much they've meant to us this year. But those things happen, Mary, that existential, the kind of psychological pit stop, it's going on for us at this time of year. It's very rich. I saw last week the wonderful production of A Christmas Carol in the Gate, with the wonderful Owen Roan,
Fionnuala Flanagan, and she, yeah.
I mean, what a wonderful production! But I think one of the most important pieces in that for me was when the ghost of Christmas yet to come comes to meet Scrooge, and that's the transformatory moment for Scrooge, because he begins to think about, well, actually, what am I leaving behind? What is important? What have I got caught up in? What kind of fiction, Mary, have I got? Internal fiction have I gotten caught up in? What kind of story am I telling myself? So and I don't think it's a bit morbid, actually. Some of us think, oh gosh, I don't think it is at all. But when we can view our lives at this time of year through that kind of lens, there was a wonderful Australian palliative care nurse, worked for many years in palliative care, she identified the regrets of hundreds of patients, and there were a couple of them that really struck me. One of them was, I wish I hadn't worked as hard.
And you often hear that, don't you?
Yeah. Often, at end of life, I wish I hadn't given so much of my life to work. I wish I'd stayed in touch with my friends. I wish I'd allowed myself to be happier. So this time of year, Mary, offers us the capacity to reflect back, and also maybe to do a little bit of planning in terms of next year. What's my priority? What do I want to give and share this one precious life with?
Paul, let's end maybe this series that we've been doing in the lead up to Christmas with the antidote maybe to some of the tensions that some might experience over the next couple of days. And give us your antidote to all that tension.
There's a poet, a Zen poet, John Tarrant, who I really like, and his kind of advice at this time of year, you know, so when we're sitting around the table or watching the television in the evening, surrounded by people, just ask ourselves, you know, wait a minute, what if this is it? What if this is it? Because a lot of us will harbour some fantasy that this is going to repeat itself, or it hasn't quite turned out. So very gently, in a very kind tone, to ask ourselves that question. You know, what if this is it? And the liberation and the fun that can come. We go, actually, yeah, this is it. And the other thing, and you'll see this, Mary, happening all over the country, and there is buckets of research that's telling us about the value of blue and green. So getting out into the blue sky, looking at the sea, if you're lucky enough, getting out into nature. there's buckets of research that's saying actually this can do more for our mental health than many other things.
Really, after all of the talk and the conversation and everything else, you're saying exercise.
Exercise, Mary, green and blue. Get out to the green and the blue. And that helps us get out of our own way. But, you know, Mary, really the bottom line is, can we lower our expectations? You know, really to lower the expectations. Expect a little bit of friction. And really then just to get out of our own way.
Have a very happy Christmas, Dr. Paul Dalton. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mary.